next in our series in this second book of the Bible. Perhaps we should remind ourselves of the predicament that the people of Israel found themselves in. They were slaves in Egypt. And Moses had returned to them and had promised them that soon God would set them free from slavery and lead them to the promised land, the land of Canaan. And so Moses, after promising the people that they would be free, had gone to see Pharaoh, the emperor of Egypt, and said, "The Lord asks you, demands of you, that you let my people go. You set them free." But instead, Pharaoh made the situation of the people of Israel worse. Instead of making bricks with straw provided for them, they now had to go and gather the straw themselves. But they were not allowed to make less number of bricks, they had to make the same number as before. And they were beaten and whipped to make sure that they kept up their previous productivity. So their suffering was greatly increased. And they wondered, "What is this that Moses has done to us? He promised us freedom, and instead we are suffering even more." A few things to note here. First of all, blame. Who was to blame for this worsening situation? The Israelites blame Moses himself. In chapter 5, verse 20 and 21, we read, "When they left Pharaoh, they found Moses and Aaron waiting to meet them, and they said, 'May the Lord look upon you and judge you. You have made us a stench to Pharaoh and his officials, and have put a sword in their hand to kill us.'" The Israelite leaders blamed Moses, their leader. And Moses, who does he blame? He blames himself. At the end of our reading today, in verse 12 of chapter 6, Moses says, "It's my own inadequacy, my faltering lips, that have caused this trouble to come." Just a few thoughts from that. People naturally blame their leaders, don't they? It's the custom in our own country with our political system that we blame the government, whether it be Labour or Conservative or whatever, for all the woes of the land. If there is unemployment, it's the government's fault. If there's inflation, it's the government's fault. If there's homelessness and crime, it's the government's fault. We're trained to think in that way. The assumption behind that is that we ordinary people who live in the country have nothing to do with it. It's our leaders who should be all-powerful and all-wise and able to solve all our problems to make us perfectly happy. Leaders never have had that power or wisdom, and we're mistaken if we think that they should be able to solve all our problems. In churches too, you know, the leader, who I suppose is the minister, is often thought to be the one who must be responsible for the spiritual life of the whole fellowship. He should carry us along spiritually. That assumes the minister can do everything and has all the talents. Moses blamed himself, and so leaders often do blame themselves. I remember in my former parish going to a church where there was an induction of a new minister. And one of my colleagues, another minister, was to preach the message, and he was speaking to the congregation about the reception of their new minister. And I remember what he said. He said, if you as a congregation are uncommitted, if you don't support, if you don't come to the services, the minister will not blame you. He'll blame himself. I think that's true, just as Moses blamed himself for the worsening situation. B, second point. Getting away from blame now, what about the feeling of helplessness of the people? We read in verse 9 of chapter 6, Moses reported this to the Israelites, that is, that God would deliver them, but they did not listen to him because of their discouragement and cruel bondage. When a country and a government organizes oppression of people, like the Egyptian government organized the oppression of the Israelites, then the oppressed people feel totally helpless, and they even give up protesting. There are many places in the world today where people are protesting, aren't there? We hear about it on our TVs. But you know, the people who are most oppressed in this world by their governments do not protest because they feel so hopeless. If the government is powerful enough and well organized enough, then people don't even protest. And that's how the Israelites felt then. We have learnt just in the last 12 months of really 70 years of oppression in the Soviet Union, which is far worse than we had imagined. Even those who were against the Soviet Union in the past didn't realize it was bad, as it's so bad as it was. But the people were kept down so much, and the feeling of hopelessness was so great, that they felt there was nothing they could do, and they didn't demonstrate, and they didn't protest. However, kingdoms built on cruelty, like the Egyptian kingdom, usually go mad and destroy themselves eventually. And that is what has happened many times in history. And ultimately it was the prayers of the people of Israel that reached God, just as it had been the prayers of people who were not able to demonstrate and protest, that have brought down other empires in more recent years. Don't minimize the effect of prayer. I believe it is a very powerful instrument in our world today. We must pray. It releases the power of God into our world. Next point, the ability to endure. If you and I know that there is someone who cares and listens when we are suffering, that God hears our groaning, then we will be able to endure. We read in verse 5 of chapter 6, the Lord says, moreover, I've heard the groaning of the Israelites, whom the Egyptians are enslaving, and I have remembered my covenant. It's very difficult to bear pain if no one knows about it. Let's think of some people who've had a lot of pain in the last decades. The black people of South Africa. But their pain has been relieved to a certain extent by the knowledge that the world knew what they were suffering. Books were written, television programs were seen. The world knew about it. That helped them. But there are places in this world where nobody knows of the suffering because the TV reporters and the authors and the journalists don't go there because they're not allowed. Just now we're learning of a place I mentioned in prayer earlier in this service, East Timor. I expect many of us don't even know where it is. It's a place with a strong Christian population, but it's governed by a nation who invaded it 15 years ago, a Muslim government of Indonesia. And 200,000 of those people have been killed by the government just in the last few years. And we didn't see it on our television. We didn't read books about it. And so the people there felt that no one knew. And that made their pain worse. But now we're beginning to learn, and the prayers of those people, we've read about them, are going up to God, and God is hearing their prayers, and deliverance is coming to those people. And to you and I who suffer in any way, whether we're young or old, and whatever our pain may be, what a great strength it is to enable us to endure when we know that we have a living God who cares and loves us. And that leads us to the second point. We're able to endure pain if we know that there is deliverance coming sometime. Think of the people of Dubrovnik, whom we've seen on the television in these last few weeks. What is enabling them to endure? How are they managing to keep their spirits up? They have believed that deliverance would come to them, even in this seemingly hopeless situation. And that is what has kept them going. Now, that's true for all of us. Our suffering is bearable if we know there will be an end to it.